This week's parsha of Parshas Ki Tavo deals with different issues that are pertinent for Klal Yisrael upon entering into the land of Israel. The parsha begins with the law of Bikurim, bringing in the first fruit, the Vidui Maestros, the confession in terms of getting rid of the Maestro in the proper times. We have the beautiful description of the two mountains, Har Grizim and Har Eval, how the Jewish people will undergo a covenant with God when they, immediately upon entering the land, taking upon themselves really the oath of the Torah. And perhaps the bulk of the parasha is the brachos and the klalos, the blessing and the curses, that if we follow God's ways, what will befall us? And if, God forbid, we turn from God's ways, those 98 terrible curses that would befall the Jewish people. We know that our rabbis teach us that Parsha Ki Tavo was always read 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah. And the most obvious reason given is that the brachos and klalos are almost a warning to us. Rosh Hashanah is coming, it's the time of Yom HaDin, the Day of Judgment, and understand the consequences and ramification of one's actions and know what the positive path is and the negative path is, so we were able to make a conscious decision on how to lead our lives. I think, in looking at the first mitzvah of the parasha, the mitzvah of Bikurim, I think it too gives us a directive in terms of preparing for Rosh Hashanah, in terms of giving us an insight into what this new year is all about. If we take a look at the section, the way the parasha begins, the Torah tells us it will be when you enter the land that Hashem your God gives you as an inheritance and you possess it and dwell in it, that you shall take of the first of every fruit of the ground, and we know that's one of the seven species that the land of Israel is known for, it's unique about the land, that you bring in from your land that Hashem your God gives you, and you shall put it in a basket, and go to the place that Hashem your God will choose to make his name rest there. We know that the person would bring it to the, with tremendous fanfare, to the Kohen takes the basket, and we wave the basket in a prescribed manner, and then the owner makes a declaration about the history of the Jewish people, how God brought them from slavery to the promised land, and the end of the section tells us, and you shall lay it before Hashem your God, and you shall prostrate yourself before Hashem your God, and you shall be glad with all the goodness that Hashem your God has given you, and your household, you and the Levite and the proselyte who is in your midst. This mitzvah Bikurim, which seems on the surface to be a very beautiful and simple mitzvah, it's a mitzvah of taking the first fruits of our land. And the Chazal described to us that you see a teina, you see a fig that just begins to ripen, you tie a red string around it, and you mark this off, this is Bikurim. And then you take all of these first fruits, you bring them to the Beis HaMikdash, and this is the gift that you give from the fruit of your land. But we find in the Medrash and Bereishit Rabbah that there's a much deeper significance to this mitzvah, and there's a lot more importance attached to this mitzvah. The Medrash says, Rav Huna said in the name of Rav Matna, the world was created in the merit of three things. In the merit of challah, separating a piece from the dough and giving it to a kohen. In the merit of maestros, of tithes. And in the merit of bikurim. What is the reason? There is no beginning but Bikurim. As the verse says, the first are the Bikurim of your field. The mitzvah Bikurim is clearly understood based on the way the Chumash describes the mitzvah of the reshit, the first of every fruit of the ground. And the Medrash comes to say that that's the meaning of the reshit bara Elokim et haShemayim v'et haAretz. In the beginning, Kadosh Baruch Hu created the heaven and the earth. The reshit b'zchut haReshit. In the merit of the reshit, in the merit of those that represent the beginning. Chal is called the beginning, maestros are called the beginning, bikurim are called the beginning. It's the merit of these things that the world was created. So the question that we need to ask ourselves is, what is it about bikurim that merits such a great thing that the whole world, the creation of the world is justified because this mitzvah bikurim will take place? What is the greatness of Bikurim that Bereishit bara Elokim et haShemayim v'et haAretz, the whole world was created really in the schus and the merit of this mitzvah Bikurim? What is the significance of the mitzvah Bikurim? why does the Medrash or Chazal place so much emphasis on this mitzvah? I think the question can be further developed based on a Medrash Tanchuma. And it's this Medrash Tanchuma that really opens our eyes, I believe, into what the Bikurim is all about. The Medrash says, it's a fascinating Medrash, that Moshe Rabbeinu gazed with Ruach HaKodesh, with divine inspiration, and saw that in the future the temple would be destroyed, and that the Bikurim, the first fruits, would terminate. So he arose and instituted for the Jewish people they should pray three times a day. It's a fascinating Medrash. You know, there were many things that were involved in the temple service. I don't find the Medrash saying Moshe Rabbeinu saw that some other aspect would be terminated and therefore instituted prayer. There was something about the Bikurim specifically that frightened Moshe Rabbeinu so much, and he said, if we lose the Bikurim, we lose such an important aspect of service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we better have a safeguard. We better have some other institution that's going to connect us to God in the same way that Bikurim is. The Medrash says that what did Moshe Rabbeinu institute? He instituted that we should pray three times a day, which is also fascinating. The Medrash, if we look carefully, doesn't say that we should pray, but rather there is this emphasis of prayer three times a day. We need to understand what is the significance of the three times daily and the concept of prayer. In trying to understand what the essence of Bikurim is about, I'd like to take a look at two levels, where really it's one is the further development and deepening of the other. The first level is based on the understanding of the Shem Yishmuel, the Sakachever Rebbe. And at the beginning of his discussion on this Medrash, he quotes a very beautiful Zohar. The Zohar Kadosh says, that they need to show and to concede that only because of divine chesed, kindness, do they merit all this and dwell in the land. He brought them into this land, provided them with all this goodness. This is why they must say of all these things to the Kohen, because he represents the chesed of God. Shem Shmuel explains the Zohar by saying, it declares that the function of the mitzvah Bikurim is to emphasize to the individual and indeed to make him declare that his very existence in Eretz Yisrael is dependent not on his own merits, but on the grace of God. This, we may suggest, is akin to the purpose of creation itself. This is what it means that the world was created Bereishit for the schus, for the merit of the Reishit, of the first fruits of the Bikurim. Because it really is teaching us for mankind to realize that he's created through the chesed of God alone, and for him to admit this and accept the consequences. And in fact, Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo says this, that the intention of all the mitzvot is that we should believe in our God and concede to him that he created us. The mitzvah of Bikurim, the mitzvah of taking, going down to our field, looking at those first fruits that ripen, and instead of saying, oh, look how great I am, look at the agricultural produce that I have produced, a person declares instead, look at the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look at the kindness of God that he has bestowed upon me, that I'm able to have these fruits in my land. And I'm going to take these fruits and I'm going to consecrate them for God. This act of the Bikurim is really an identification with what the whole purpose of the world is, to recognize and to understand and to really act on this understanding that the world is a gift from God and that everything that we have in life is a gift from God and that we need to appreciate that gift, we need to recognize that gift, we need to act upon that gift. This, my friends, is such an appropriate theme for the Elul for Rosh Hashanah. That we're talking about Malchios, the kingship of God, understand Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li, that this is a relationship of love, of how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us in our life. The mitzvah of Bikurim allows us to reflect and to say, look at the Chasdei Hashem, the kindnesses that happen in our lives day in, day out. The mitzvah of Bikurim is the mitzvah of acting upon this knowledge of the Chesed of Hashem, the kindness of God. And that's why the Shem Yishmuel continues by saying, what is unique about the mitzvah Bikurim, unlike most mitzvahs, is that it encompasses the three main arenas of human life: thought, speech, and action. The fruits were brought to the temple, waved before the altar, set down there. These are actions. The owner of the fruits recited the declaration. This is speech. Finally, he prostrated himself before leaving, and this is an expression of intellectual submission to the will of God, which takes place in thought. And this explains why Bikurim is considered such a dear mitzvah in God's eyes. For the entire personality is involved in its performance. The three categories of human activity correspond and are motivated by the three parts of the soul, the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama. The whole personality realizes the sovereignty of God, admits that He created us and the world in which we live. This accurately reflects the entire purpose of man's creation. The mitzvah of Bikurim is to recognize with our whole being, our whole persona, that we are servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're here in this world really as guests of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that explains the Derechei Musar of Yaakov Naim and Zichrono Livracha. The Gemara that speaks about that when they used to bring the Bikurim, so we know that the rich people decorated the Bikurim with gold and silver. It was very nice. It's a Hiddur Mitzvah. It's a beautification of the mitzvah. And the poor people would just bring wicker baskets, plain simple baskets. The rich people's, the gold, the silver, those baskets were returned to them, and the poor baskets of the poor people, the Kohen kept. And the normal reason given is because the poor man has very little in his basket. So if just the fruit was taken out, he'd be humiliated by how little he's bringing. But the Derechei Musar explains something deeper. He says that when the poor person brings these Bikurim, that basket really represents the fact that he's bringing himself. The rich person's basket, the kesev and zahav, the gold and the silver, represents this aspect of gaiva. A little bit of haughtiness, a little bit of pride. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu really wants is the shvaruach, the lowly spirit. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts. And that's really the essence of the mitzvah of Bikurim. The mitzvah of Bikurim is giving of ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, recognizing how much we are indebted to God. If we understand that this is a mitzvah of Bikurim, the whole persona, giving ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so we can understand, says Hashem Yishmuel, by Moshe Rabbeinu in the Tachlumah explains, decided that he would establish the concept of prayers three times a day. Hashem Yishmuel explains that he felt that the great feelings aroused by this mitzvah could not be allowed to terminate with the loss of the temple, and thus instituted a system of prayer to compensate. And the Shem Shmuel explains very clearly that the function of prayer is to subjugate one's personality and will to God by admitting one's reliance upon Him. That the whole mitzvah of Bikurim, that mitzvah which is embodied by that poor man's basket, the mitzvah of the speech, the action, and the thought is the whole persona to God. Is there not a better model of giving of ourselves but totally to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than tefillah, than prayer? And the three times a day, says Hashem Shmuel, parallels the three individuals who establish the times of prayer, and those three individuals represent the different qualities necessary in prayer. So the establishing of tefillah three times a day is to remind us to incorporate the qualities of the individuals that each established a different part of the day. And Shem Yishmuel explains very clearly what were the different qualities that each of the individuals contributed. So Avraham Avinu, who established Shacharis, is clearly the intellect. He was the first to break away from idolatry, which is an intellectual error. Avraham's intense intellectual dedication prompted him to institute Shacharis. It's interesting that the Hebrew word for morning is boker, which also means clarity. It's a time of intellectual clarity for mankind, and this corresponding to Avraham Avinu himself. And as Rabbi Kurzer in the Art of Jewish Prayer points out so clearly, that there is this aspect of prayer when we daven. We know the Hebrew word for prayer, lehit palel, Rav Hirsch points out, is reflexive. It means to judge oneself. Prayer is about looking at oneself and asking oneself, why am I praying? What do I hope to achieve? What is my relationship with God? There is this aspect of prayer when we approach prayer, which is definitely an intellectual aspect. The next personality to institute the Mincha prayer is Yitzchak Avinu, whose Shem Shmuel continues by saying that he was not only able to sanctify his intellect, but he also sanctified his emotional soul as well. He was prepared to offer his very life on the altar, and that showed how he subjugated his soul to the service of God. It's the emotional soul which is the source of the human ability to talk. It is, as it was, the conjunction of his soul with the body which first enabled Adam Rishon to speak. And Mincha, the afternoon service, corresponds to this soul. As the verse describes, not a person bringing a Mincha offering, but instead a soul. And when a soul will offer a Mincha sacrifice to God. And indeed, the word Mincha finds its root in the word Minucha, meaning rest. The state of rest intended is one experienced by the soul. The Mincha is the emotional aspect. It's the soul aspect. It's that deeper part of self which really transcends the intellect. And that's why Rabbi Kurzer explains as well, there is this emotional aspect in prayer as well. Since we can't understand God, asks Rabbi Kurzer, how can we go through the motions of trying to reach Him? So he explains the answer is very simple. While our intellects cannot understand God, our emotions and hearts can comprehend and feel God. Where prayer is a function only of our brains, then we never be able to pray. The brain would never be able to transcend its physical limitations to truly comprehend God. Our hearts have the capacity to reach where intellects can't. A heart can sometimes understand how to reach another human being where the mind cannot fathom how to do so. Our minds might believe that God exists, but our hearts can feel and know how God exists. There is this emotional aspect of prayer as well. And finally, the Shem Shmuel notes that Yaakov Avinu, who is described as an Ishtam Yoshevo Alim, the perfect man, is considered to be one who is totally in control of his body and generally considered to have been the perfect specimen of humanity. And we find that Yaakov Avinu is the only one of the forefathers who offered shlamim offerings, who offered these peace offerings, these whole offerings. For only a man who has reached physical as well as intellectual and emotional perfection may bring an offering from which he may eat. This is because the consumption of holy food presupposes the ability to sanctify the physical. And this Yaakov instituted the Ma'ariv prayer, which corresponds to the limbs and fats of the animal offerings which roasted overnight on the altar in the temple. These are the most physical parts of the offering, and thus correspond to Yaakov Avinu, the man who sanctified all three arenas of human life. If Abraham is the intellectual, and Yitzchak Avinu is the emotional, Yaakov Avinu is the physical. On a very technical level, when we daven, we bow at the beginning of certain brachos, really to break the physical aspect of self, which is a reflection on the inner area. As Rabbi Kurzer notes, when we bow, we show that we subjugate our will to God and acknowledge His will as being supreme. We demonstrate that God is ultimate wisdom and goodness, and is the ultimate director of our lives. Every time we bow, we break our resistance to allowing ourselves to be dominated by God's will. And that's why Rabbi Kurzer and Rabbi Shem Shmuel in summary notes that we have seen that each of the three daily prayer services, which correspond to the Avos, provides a unique opportunity to subjugate oneself to the will of God. Shacharis is for the intellect, Mincha the emotions, and Ma'ariv the physical. Although we combine all three in every prayer, each prayer has a unique element, a unique aspect that involves a different part of self. Combined, these prayers have the potential to replace the opportunity for connection to God, which was lost when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and the Mitzvah of Bikurim canceled. Thus, when Moshe's great wisdom saw in prophecy that one day the Jewish people would no longer be able to bring the Bikurim, he rose and instituted the three prayers in their stead. So therefore, on the first level, the mitzvah of Bikurim is a mitzvah that reminds us of the chesed of Hashem, the kindness of God. It reminds us to be able to take the intellectual, the emotional, and the physical aspects, and in each prayer to focus in more specifically on one of those three aspects, although integrating all three, and to remind ourselves that life is about recognizing intellectually, emotionally, and physically the kindnesses that God has done for us, and allow prayer to be the vehicle wherein we connect with this concept and we show the proper gratitude for God for everything that He's done for us. This is the mitzvah of Bikurim, the complete bittul, the complete nullification of relationship with God, and as we heard Kedayahu says so beautifully, that when the Chazal tell us that we should imagine ourselves, we daven toward the east, or wherever we are, the direction of Yushalayim, that's not just physically thinking that we're standing in Jerusalem. It means that we're standing in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in Jerusalem. That when we daven, we have to have that hachna. We have to have that bitul, shayah b'mikdash, that total nullification that was in the temple. Bikurim was clearly the prostration on all fours. We bow in front of God. We give ourselves completely to God. Tefillah, prayer, is that same concept where we give ourselves to God and understand so clearly how every moment of our lives is really in the hands of God. This is the first level of the importance of Bikurim. We can understand why the world was created for Bikurim, because this is a fundamental aspect of the world, to recognize and to act upon this recognition and to live on a daily level this understanding, this recognition, how dependent we are on a Kadosh Baruch Hu, on God. But I think we could take this concept much deeper. This recognition, this understanding of the chesed, of the kindnesses of God, can be understood in a much more profound light based on the writings of Rav Moshe Shapiro in the Me'amakim, which I think will give us an insight into what the Shemesh Shmuel is talking about of appreciating the chesed of Hashem, the kindness of God. Me'amakim notes, quoting Rav Sadaka Kohen in the Sefer Rasisei Laila, what does it mean, the concept of reishit, that the first fruits are the reishit? The Jewish people are also called reishit fuata, the first of the crops of the wheat. So explains Rav Sadok the following. Yisrael reishit fuata, what does it mean, the Jewish people are the head of the harvest? It means shehem tachlit ha-mechuvan bibriah, that they are the goal of the intention of creation. V'ha-tachlit nikreit reishit. The tachlit, the end, the desired goal, is really called reishit, is really called the beginning. Shesof ma'aseh b'machshava tchila. The end of the action is really dependent on what were the thoughts at the beginning of the action. So therefore, when we're talking about reishit, the beginning, it's really a reference to reishit ha-machshava, the beginning of the thought. So Bereshit bara, in the beginning God created, really means that the reishit hi ha-shorash v'yesod l'chol ha-ritzono. That the reishit means that this is the root and the foundation of all the desires, of all the actions that God does in this world. V'hi ha-tachlit v'megama shalah mechuvanim kol pertei olam v'likrato so'adim hakol. And on a much deeper level, when God created the world and He created this reishit, He created these original thoughts, what it really means is that He created an end destination. He created a world with purpose. And He invested this world with purpose when He began to create the world. And therefore, what the world is all about is moving toward the fulfillment and the culmination of the original reishit, the original intention. Let's try to understand this concept a little bit better, a little bit deeper. So Semis notes that the mitzvah of Bikurim is to bring the reishit, the first fruits, to the Mikdash. And in so doing, says the Sfasemes, nitchadesh pnimiyut, there will be a renewal of the inner dimension of life. Explains the Sfasemes, ki bevadai kol yachol Hashem yitbarach liro ha'olam ba'ofen shiakiru ha'kol l'kvo ma'chuto yitbarach. Hashem Baruch Hu could have created a world where everyone clearly sees the hand of God in this world. However, v'rach v'tzeh kadosh baruch hu liyot eidut ba'olam shehu yitbarach bra'o. Rather, Kadosh Baruch Hu decided that we would have to work hard in order to establish this understanding that God created the world. And that's really the job of the Jewish people, to recognize the existence of God in this world. And that's what Bikurim is all about, that we're able to see through the mitzvah of Bikurim, the reishit, the beginning, the first fruit, that everything has a reshit, that everything has a purpose in that which God created in this world. What the Mimamakim is saying is very beautiful. He's saying is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world of reshit. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world of purpose. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created plans and everything that He created to bring to an ultimate result, to bring to godliness in this world, to bring to a level of Kavod Shamayim, a level of the manifestation of the glory of God in this world. However, it takes the individual to be able ligalot et bechinat hareshit, to be able to reveal that which is concealed, to be able to look at these first fruits and to say, ah, these are reshit. These are the hands of God. These are the handiwork of God. There is a God in the system of creation. There is someone running this world. There is somebody or something that has purpose and meaning into this world. The Bikurim, or the Reshit, the first fruits, is just an indication of our ability to step back and to pinpoint and to say, there is a creator, there is a purpose, there is a movement in this world. This idea of the concealment of God and how we need to find God in this world and to be able to recognize the spiritual intent of this world is understood so beautifully in the writings of Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, based on a very famous kapitel, Tehillim, Psalm 92, where we say in that kapitel, Magadu ma'asecha Hashem, mod amku ma'achshavosecha, how great are your deeds, Hashem, exceedingly profound are your thoughts. And the chapter continues, a boor cannot know, nor can a fool understand this. The obvious question is, what can't a boor not know? What can a fool not understand? What exactly is it that a simple person can't understand? Is it how great are your deeds, Hashem, and exceedingly profound are your thoughts? Well, most people don't know how great are God's deeds and how profound are God's thoughts. Forget a simple person. Most people can't know it. Or perhaps you may say it's the next verse, which is when the wicked bloom like grass and all the dews of iniquity blossom. Perhaps you will say that it's the next part, which deals with the concept that the good people have it bad and the bad people have it good. But also the same question can be asked. Chavakuk HaNavi had problems with this. Eov had problems with this. Great people have problems with it. It's not just a simple person. Many people have problems with it. As for Levi Yitzchak, what exactly does it mean a boor cannot know, nor can a fool understand this? So he explains so beautifully by saying that when we speak about how great are your deeds, God, exceedingly profound are your thoughts, which is also not explained to what this is referring, explains to Kedushas Levi the following. He says, can you imagine how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world where people don't automatically search out God? Where people don't automatically realize that God created the world? How great are your deeds, Hashem? Exceedingly profound are your thoughts. And what is so surprising is, what is beyond our grasp to understand, is how simple people can't know this. How a fool can't understand this. It would seem to be so simple that when you create a world, everyone would know who the creator is. Everyone would want to connect with that root, with that shoresh. What is magadu ma'asecha shemod anku ma'achshotecha, what is beyond our grasp to understand, is how God created a world where this is not so obvious. A little child does not need to be taught. When you're hungry, go ask Ima or Abba, Mommy or Daddy for food. And when you need something, you ask them for help. They're not taught this. This is something that's built into the system, that they need help, they're hurting, whatever it is or whatever age, they know they go to the parents. That's the most simple and logical thing that every child knows. How come we don't know to turn to our Father in Heaven, Avinu Shebashamayim, and ask Him for help? I remember in Eretz Yisrael once, and the little girl asked me, we were at somebody's house with Shel Shudis, and the little girl asked me, she says, where are your children? I said, we don't have any yet. And a complete innocence of a five-year-old, she says to me, so why don't you ask your father? He'll give you children. And I said to myself, the depth of this child is so incredible, because her understanding is so simple. When you need something, you turn to your father. Why don't we have that understanding when we need something? that we turn to Avinu Shebashamayim, our Father in Heaven. It's interesting because a remark similar to this is what changed an entire person's life. It's a beautiful story that's told in Echoes of the Maggid. Around 100 years ago, a certain rabbi from Eretz Yisrael came to Italy. He's walking through the Jewish section looking for a place to stay or a shul, and a man in a very fancy carriage saw him wandering around, invited him into his carriage, said, "I'm a from Jew, you can stay by me." Invited this rabbi to his mansion, and they had a wonderful meal. And the rabbi's looking around at the beautiful artwork and the beautiful decor of the house, and he's looking in the china cabinet at this jagged edge, and it really did not fit into the decor of the whole house. And he's staring at it, and he's saying to himself, with all these fancy items here, what is this glass doing here? So the man of the house saw the rabbi staring at this glass, and he told him, "I'll tell you a story about this glass and why I keep it here." So the man explained that when he was 18 years old, he was living in Amsterdam, that's where he grew up, and his grandfather was living in Italy, was sick. And his grandfather asked whether he could come and help with the business. And he came down to help with the business. A couple of months later, the grandfather died, and his parents wanted him to liquidate the business and move back to Amsterdam, and he said, "You know, he's doing well there, why should he leave?" And he said that what happened was that he was really good at business, he was making a lot of money, his customers liked him. And he said that one day he was so involved in business, he forgot to daven mincha, what we were speaking about earlier, subjugating one's entire life to God. And he said, "No big deal, tomorrow I'll remember." And the next day he forgot to daven chakras as well as mincha. And he said it was a slippery slope, but for before long, he just left completely all of his upbringing and got immersed totally in the material world, in the business world. He got married, had children, and he lived this way for many years. One day he was coming home from work, and he saw a group of children playing, and he heard one boy screaming. And he went to see what was wrong, and he heard the boy screaming, "What will I tell my father? What will I tell my father?" And wailing hysterically. So the man asked, "What's going on?" So the boy said, "Tonight is Hanukkah, and my father saved up all his money to buy a little bit of oil for tonight to light the Hanukkah menorah. And he said to me, go to the store, get a flask of oil, and do not play with your friends, and bring this oil home immediately." And what happened? I saw my friends playing. I put the flask of oil down, and it broke, and all the oil spilled out. What will I tell my father? What will I tell my father? How can I go back to him without this oil? So this rich man said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it for you." He went to the store, bought him a much bigger amount of oil, gave it to the child, and sent him home. And then this man said to himself, he said, "What will I tell my father?" The rich man said, "What will I tell my father in heaven when he asks me, why have I strayed so far?" Those words, "What will I tell my father," struck in him so deeply, and it aroused his whole childhood, that he went to the store, bought a flask of oil for himself to light Hanukkah candles that night, something he had not done in years. And on his way home, he picked up that glass of that broken flask of that little boy and brought it home with himself. And he said that that was the beginning of the transformation, where his whole family embraced Yiddishkeit once again. But in order to remember that special moment of "What will I tell my father in heaven," he keeps that broken glass, because that was the turning point in his relationship. This should be so much part and parcel of our lives, that we understand the world has a reshit, the world has a beginning, the world has a makor, the world has a source. That we should turn to Avinu Shebashamayim, we should turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That we don't need to have this reminder of Ani L'dodi V'dodi Li, that God is in the fields, come out to greet Him. That this relationship of God, of this closeness, should be part and parcel of who we are. And that, my friends, is really the key of what the Bikurim is all about. The fascinating Balaturim that Ramakim continues and quotes, and at face value this Balaturim makes no sense, but at understanding it, not only do we get a sense of the Balaturim, we gain a sense of the depth of what Yiddishkeit is all about. The Baal Turim says the following. The Hebrew word for basket is tenet, tet nun aleph, which is the gematria of samech. Tet, the numerical value of tet is 9, nun is 50, aleph is 1. 9 and 50 and 1 is 60. Continues the Baal Turim. This is a remez, it's a hint to us, lebikurim echad mitzamech, that you have to take 1/60th of your crops and give it for bikurim. That's very sweet, it's very nice, Baal Turim, that the gematria of basket is 60, and we put in our basket 1/60th of our crops. But the Baal Turim goes on, and he says, v'lechach, and therefore, ne'elam samech b'parashat bikurim. If you look closely, you'll notice that there's no letter samech in the entire section dealing with the bikurim with the first fruits. What's going on here? Tene is 60, 1 and 60. There's no 60 in the parsha because we don't need 60. We have the basket which represents 60. What's going on here? So here's the Mamaki Ramosha Shapiro explains the following, and this is the depth, my friends. He says, as we've noted, Olam comes from the word of Helam, of concealment, where Kadosh Baruch Hu conceals himself from this world. And the world looks like it is Kayam Upoel Kemshech Mechuyam Mesiba Kodemet. The world seems to be running from one cause that leads to another, that leads to another, and it seems to be going on its own, as if there's nothing really propelling it forward. From a very superficial look, it looks like there is no creator of the world that is bringing this world to a tachlit, to an end. It just seems to be running. It's called the humdrums of life. Today is here because of yesterday, and then there will be a tomorrow, and life runs like nature on a cycle. Sun rises, the sun sets. This day comes in, that day comes out. This season comes in, that season comes out. You plant, you have produce. You take the produce, you plant some more, you have more produce. One year comes in, one year comes out. Life seems to be the secular relationship. The Jewish people's job, the reishis of the Jewish people, is to try to go beyond this understanding, to really elevate this, and to realize that there is a cause, there is a reishit, there is a beginning, and that beginning foretells an end, and that life has a purpose for which everything was created. Things aren't just done by nature, by habit, by rote. There is purpose, there is meaning. There is reishit, there is a beginning, which means there's an end as well. There's someone who is actively, something actively, injecting and infusing life with purpose and with meaning. When I bring bikurim, when I bring the first fruits, it's a statement. When I bring the reishit, the first fruit, of the question of, I understand that this crop is not here just because last year's crop was here, but rather there's someone who allowed this crop to be here. By bringing the first fruits, I'm recognizing that there's purpose in this world, that the world is not an automatic pilot, that I'm able to reveal that which is concealed, that there's a God running this world, and this God is a reishit, this God has purpose, and this God has meaning and infuses meaning into this world. Continues Me'amakim. The two geometric figures that really represent these two world outlooks is the circle and the line. The circle, we know by definition, as Rabbi Tatz notes in Living Inspired, is the only shape possible which has no unique point. Unlike any other geometric shape, any of its segments is identical to all the others. From the smallest arc, the rest is predictable. It has no newness at all. The danger of this phase that is open to staleness, to lack of creativity, to force of habit, to depression. What the circle represents is the beginning of the circle, you know, the whole circle. It's the question of, you have a certain genetic tendency, you have a certain upbringing, that this is the way you're going to be, you're going to be locked into it for life. You start off a certain way, and it's just a secular pattern, the circle, and you'll never get beyond that. It's a world of staleness, a world of lack of creativity, a world that desensitizes, a world that freezes. The line, on the other hand, has the ability to grow, to continue, to constantly move forward. And explains the Me'amakim that the two letters in the Hebrew alphabet that reflect these two outlooks, the circle which reflects that the whole world is stale, one thing leads to another, you can know part of the arc, you know the whole circle. And the other world outlook, that the line is constantly growing, constantly moving, it has different measurements to it, are the two letters in the Hebrew alphabet of the Samech and the Vav. The Samech, that perfect circle, there's no beginning and there's no end. And the Vav, which is the beginning of the letter Yud, which represents the Chokhmah, the wisdom, that moves down, and that downward is this concept of Reshit, of purpose. Is it any wonder in the Hebrew language that the Vav is the Vav HaChibur? Of all the letters, which letter connects one idea to another? Clearly it has to be the Vav, because the Vav represents L'chaber et kol hamshichiyut ha'olam l'sharasha b'chinat chibur ha'charit l'reishit. The whole concept of the Vav, the whole concept of what the Vav represents, is to connect Hemshechiyut, continuation in this world, to connect everything back to its source, to its root, to connect the Acharis to the Reshit, the end to the beginning. That's what the Vav represents. And now we can understand so clearly why in our Parsha there is no Samech, just like there's no Samech in the story of the creation, there's no Samech in the Parsha of the Bechor, the laws of the firstborn. Let's understand this concept of Baal Turim a little bit deeper. Explains Me'am Akim. What is the significance of the fact that the basket is the numerical value of 60? The basket represents the item that holds the blessing from God. It represents the Shefa, it represents the kindness, the goodness that is now standing Minutak Mikaro, that is standing now disconnected from its source. It's standing by itself, without a reishit, without a makor. It's a standing like the samech. The whole concept of a basket, which is now not connected to the ground, it seems to be something of its own entity. You don't realize that it has a beginning and it's moving toward a certain goal. The whole basket represents, it embodies the samech, it embodies that concept of staleness, that concept of being minutak, of being disconnected to its source. And that's why, what do we bring for Bikurim? We take one of the 60, which means what? We take that 60, we take that Samech, and we add a oneness to it. The oneness is the Reshit, the oneness of God, which represents the concept of roots, the concept of a makor, the concept of understanding that God is really running this world. By taking 1 in 60, we are saying that this basket does have a connection with God. What the Baal Turim is saying is really the depth of this whole section. What the section is teaching us is that life is about a reshit, understanding that God has a purpose, that everything is connected back to the root of godliness, that there is a God running this world. The danger of the world is not to see God. The danger of the world is the staleness. The danger of the world is the samech. And that's why the Sfas Emes says so beautifully that the concept of Bikurim is hitarer ha'itchatshut ba'olam, is to arouse this newness in the world. And it's ayideishin at nu ha'reshit, it's through giving this reshit, we are bringing everything kol davar l'sharasho, we're elevating everything to its source. And here's the key, nitorer lahem hitchatshut hachayut min hasharesh. And that allows us to be injected with newness, with life from the source. When we connect ourselves with that everlasting spring of life, when we connect ourselves to the overflowing source of everything, so we become part and parcel of that source, and we ourselves are injected with newness, we ourselves are different people. And that's how the Sfas Emes explains, when the Torah tells us each day we have to look as if God commanded us the mitzvot. And he says that the way we can do this is because the renewal is there within everything. God renews each day constantly the work of creation. Constantly means in each moment. Nothing exists without the divine life force, and the moment each thing that comes from him never grows old, since his words are constantly alive and flowering. There is this darkness that covers the world. That's the natural world that hides the renewal. But it's within the power of man to light up that point within the darkness. And that's what our life is about. If God is this constant hitchatshus, God is this constant renewal, we need to tap into that renewal. By giving the Bikurim, it's a statement of we found the Reishi, that Bikurim, the first fruits, aren't here just as part of the natural order. They have meaning, they have purpose, there's a God behind the system of nature. Life is about being able to inject the whole world with that vav, with that constant flow, and not to get caught up in the samech. And that's how Rabbi Katz from Living Inspired explains so beautifully the concept of Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, correctly lived, should leave one supercharged. The energy achieved should be so great that the rest of the year can be lived accordingly. Not as a continuation, but as a constant experience of newness. Spark must become flame, and that flame must spark a new blaze always. That is Jewish living. There's a mystical idea that being alive today, because one was alive yesterday, is called dying. Being really alive means that one's life is generated today, not as a passive result of the past, but as an explosion of newness now and always. That's what life is about, generating newness today. The fact that I was alive yesterday means that I'm alive today. That, my friends, is dying. Life is about constant hitchatshus. If you're able to reveal God, so then you're able to touch into that everlasting wellspring of life and the constant renewal that is inherent in that recognition. And that's how we can understand on a deeper level, Rabbi Katz says, that Avraham Avinu says to himself, Anochi afar ve'efer, I'm dust and ashes. What is the meaning of dust and ashes? Ashes are the bare elements left when a substance has been completely burned. Dust of the earth is a rich soil in which growth takes place. Avraham most profoundly represents the idea of newness, the father, the founder of Jewish people. Sees himself as constantly incinerating what he has become in order to use those elements as soil for new growth. No element of his development is allowed to continue passively. Here today because it was here yesterday. All of his being is distilled into a memory, which is a nucleus for a new birth constantly. That is the power of Chiddush, self-generating newness, the source of spiritual life and growth. This is what life is all about, constantly seeing ourselves as new. And that we can understand why Moshe Rabbeinu, understanding that the point of the Bikurim is newness, is to revitalize our lives, is to understand that when we come to Rosh Hashanah, it's not saying to ourselves, well, I've been this way for the last 47 years, so what do you want from me, God? I'll be this way for another 47 years. That's life. Face it. That's the attitude of the Samech. The attitude of the Bikurim 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah teaches us, no. The attitude which Moshe Rabbeinu understood in the Bikurim is, the fact that I was this way for 47 years does not mean I need to be this way another moment longer. We have the ability to change. We have the ability to connect ourselves with this momentum built into the world of being able to find God. The Bikurim are Reishi. They're the first fruits. To be able to see the Reishi, to be able to see the Makor, the source of what life is all about. To be able to turn to Avinu Shevashamayim, our Father in Heaven, and to realize that it's to Him we can turn with all our problems, like a little child turns to their parent. And that is the way the Me'amakim explains why Moshe Rabbeinu instituted davening, particularly 3 times a day. And he says so beautifully the significance of 3 times a day, based on the Ramchal and Derech Hashem, is that there's a mitzvah to daven with the sun rising as well as with the sun setting. That we're able to see the different parts of the day, the different parts of the natural order as we daven. Davening corresponds when the sun is just beginning to rise, the sun is slowly setting, the darkness in the world, the davening represents the three times a day that we're able to touch into the changes in nature, the changes that go on around us every single day in the natural order. The davening at these times reminds us, you know, my friends, just like the day changes, so too we have this ability to inject change and newness in our own lives. Is it any wonder that the bracha of Kriyat Shema, before we accept the Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim, the yoke of heaven upon ourselves, is the bracha and chakras of Yotzer HaMoros, God who creates the luminary, and at night Mariv HaRavim, who creates this darkness. And then and only then can we accept upon ourselves the Ol Malchut Shamayim, because it's only when we understand how God is constantly mechadesh b'tuvo b'chol yom tamin maaseh b'reishit, how God constantly rejuvenates nature. When we understand that there's this constant change in this world, if we're open to it, we see how life changes, we see how nature changes. If we can tap into that, we can tap into what the secret and the source of what reishit is all about, this renewal is all about. And when we daven, we understand that the way we were during the morning is not necessarily the way we have to be in the afternoon. And just because we were a certain way yesterday does not mean we need to be this way tomorrow. Nature has changed. We have the ability to change. And that's why, in conclusion, we know that the first law of the Shulchan Aruch is to get up in the morning. We need to understand that life is about taking that initiative, beginning with enthusiasm, get up like a lion, get up and understand that this day is the first day of our lives. What this day has to offer us, no other day has to offer for us. And he notes in Living Inspired, Rabbi Tatz, there is no negativity in the moment of new creation. While the energy of creativity is flowing, depression and despair are impossible. The spiritual root of depression is lack of growth in the personality. When time ticks away and nothing new is being built, when all is static, the neshama feels the cold hand of death. Life is about breaking out of that depression. Life is about breaking out of that constant problem we all face. The constant problem of, oh, another day. Oh, another day at work. Oh, another day with the kids. Oh, another day. Walking through life, oh, another day, is walking through a life of staleness, walking through a life of depression, walking through a life of samach. Rosh Hashanah, the time of change, is teaching us a lesson which we need to remember for the entire year, is that there is inherent within each and every one of us to be a different person every day, to at least approach the day as this day is the beginning of a whole new set of experiences, a whole new set of relationships. And we have the ability to change. That idea that we can change, that idea that we can tap into that resource of God who is constantly revitalizing this world, and we can become part of the system. We can recognize the Makor, we can recognize the source, we can resonate with Him, is really the message we need to hear 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah, when we think about what the new year changes will bring. And therefore, in summary, on the first level, Reishit is the creation of the world. Everything depends on God's chesed, and that is why this mitzvah is so important. On a deeper level, everything in life has a purpose to it. Being able to find out the Reishit, the beginning, means that there's a tachlis, there's an end, there's purpose. The theme of Bikurim on one level is total dedication to God, our entire being. On the second level, it's the renewal of the world, that the world can be revitalized every single day. Why do we have prayer 3 times a day? To correspond on one level to the intellectual, emotional, and physical components. But on a second level, a much deeper level, is to sensitize ourselves to the changes in the day. The basket we saw on one level is this aspect of humility, and on a deeper level, the basket is the danger of staleness, which is so common in our lives. The lesson we can learn from the Bikurim on one level is to have a complete relationship with God. To just have an intellectual or just an emotional, just a physical relationship with God is not enough. Bikurim encompasses our entire being. That's the type of relationship we need with God. And on a deeper level, what Bikurim represents is just like these fruits are new fruits. But these fruits aren't here just because that's the cycle of life. But rather, I understand that God is behind these fruits. That there's a reshit, that there's a beginning to life. Just like there's a beginning to these fruits, there's a beginning cause of everything in life. And what I need to do is reveal God. What I need to do is realize there's a God in the heaven that I need to turn to. It then revitalizes our entire life. It gives our whole life newness, a refreshing view. It's a renewal of life that allows us to walk into Rosh Hashanah and say we can change, we can grow, and we can break out of that samech, out of that circle, and live a life of above, a life that connects our present with our past, ourselves with that ultimate source of God, and resonate with this constant newness.